Hello, my name is Dr. Nicola Riaz, and I would like to extend a warm welcome to you for joining us at EFI News for episode 8 of the Anti-Racism in Action live stream. Anti-Racism in Action for me is about building relationships, making space for our voices to be listened to by the decision makers in the sector and our institutions. Anti-Racism in Action is a recognition that there is a collective drive from activists and educators to push for change, not only by highlighting the gap, but also showing feasible, attainable strategies and actions that are needed for that change to happen. Thank you.
Welcome to episode 8 of Anti-Racism in Action. Today is our main focus is going to be on Scotland. My name is Gavin O'Mara. I'm the CEO and founder of EFI News. If you're on EFI News, yeah, it does look different. We've launched a new site. And my co-host today is Robin Lamb. Robin, I wonder if you could join us in the studio. Hey, Robin, how are you?
Nice to see you. Much nice to see you, Gavin. I can't believe it's that late already.
I know, it's gone so fast, isn't it? And it was great to see you in person last week at AOC as well. So much going on at the moment. Yeah. Today's a really interesting episode, but I think before we started with everyone in the background, there's a green room, and we have a bit of a chat in the green room before it all starts. And Stada made a really interesting point about what Dr. Riaz said in that opening address. Very interesting address there, really, to be honest with you. I don't know if you wanted to, it sort of naturally aligns with Black EFI Leadership Group, doesn't it, around what your aims and vision is for the future.
It does. We're all about collaboration and partnership, and this is not going to be achieved by Black communities on their own. We do need help and assistance from our white allies, and we know there are copious numbers of them out there who want to solve this issue once and for all.
Yeah, 100%. I think today is going to be a really, really interesting episode. I'm a little bit of a fan of one of our guests very, very much, actually. But it's interesting. We're looking at Scotland's, and this is the fifth out of our eight episodes so far. This is the fifth when we're looking at place-based leadership. And I think this is really interesting. I've really enjoyed when we're looking at place-based leadership. I think it's been really, really good to sort of delve into that in a lot more detail. Just to do a little bit of background and put it into context, 4% of Scotland's population is classified as non-white ethnic minority. Scotland has recently released the Race Equality Framework for Scotland with an aspiration for race equality by 2030, which is really interesting. What I think is quite cool in that is that I love it when people are just, you know, can draw a line and are just honest about this sort of stuff, really. In the opening to the framework, it highlights 50 years on from the Race Relations Act 1965, which I didn't know was the first legislation to address race equality in the UK. Very interesting. But it basically highlights that in that 50-year period, unfortunately, as everyone knows, but it's one thing knowing, another thing, stating it, is that not much has really changed in that 50-year period. Outcomes for ethnic minorities is still low. Employability rates are still low. Rates of poverty is still high. And what we're trying to do today is bring in different experts, particularly place-based leaders, to be able to come together and work out, let's reverse that. And let's make it, 2030, how can we sort of move forward, really? We've got two really interesting guests. We've got Jin Metcalf from CDN, the College Development Network. We've got Audrey Cumberford from Edinburgh College. And Audrey is also the co-author of the Cumberford Little Report, which I'm a bit of a fan of from 2020 last year as well. Yeah. I wonder, Audrey and Jim, could you join us in the studio if you could, please? Hello.
Morning.
Hi.
Sorry, Audrey. I'm a bit of a fan about that report and about what you've done there. I'm like, oh, that's quite cool. I was like, got a bit excited. I thought he was coming on. And Jim, I'm also excited as well. But
don't worry. I'm used to playing second fiddle to Audrey. Groupies for Audrey are normal. That's fine by me. Don't worry.
I heard a thing yesterday. You need a second fiddle to have a harmony. So this is what it's all about. So Robert, I didn't know if you wanted to open up at all with, sort of asking Audrey and Jim around what we were talking about earlier around looking at government sort of directives and how sort of place-based leaders can sort of be pioneering that, really.
Yes, Audrey, Jim, it's great to welcome you both. First of all, Audrey is the first BFE-LG affiliated organisation in Scotland, and Jim, honourably, very close second, as that CDN is going through the process now of affiliation. One of the things that I find fascinating is this commitment from the Scottish Government to achieve race equality by 2030. That's a big ambition. And I just wondered whether you'd like to started by just trying to flesh out how what the role is of the college system in assisting the government in achieving that.
Okay, well, Jim, are you happy for me to kick that off? Yeah. Do you know, Scotland actually is a small place, you know, and when I think about that in terms of the college sector, actually, it's very, very easy for the leaders within the college sector to get together. So the principals meet on a regular basis every couple of weeks and certainly every month. And when it comes to that kind of really co-working with people in the system, so the funders and government and officials who set policy, is that I've heard the term conversation used a lot, actually, and within this context. So for me, and this might sound quite simplistic, but I don't see that there's any excuse in Scotland, because actually of the scale of Scotland, is that we can get the right people round the right tables to have the right conversations and make decisions and drive and lead on certain agendas. And I know in my own situation, if I can be specific for a minute, is the Edinburgh College. So we serve Edinburgh, the city of Edinburgh, so the capital of Scotland and the wider Lothian region. And it's the largest college in Scotland. So, you know, it accounts for about 10% of all of college activity in Scotland. So for me, apart from the oh mammy daddy about that, it's, you know, that is a huge responsibility, actually, in terms of to the people and the organisations and the stakeholders within that region, is I believe a college, any college, has an opportunity to be that centre point, that pivot point in that region, to not go it alone, but certainly to help, you know, kind of galvanise people or conversations. And around Gavin, you know, you mentioned that the importance of place is hugely important, actually. So it's about the kind of national ambitions, but how are they delivered locally where it feels real to people and communities. So and I was quite depressed when you talked about the legislation in 1965, because that's when I was born, actually. So the fact that not much has happened would suggest to me that there probably has been change, and positive change, but incremental and around the edges. And I guess what we're trying to do, and I'm trying to do through this affiliation, which I'm very hopeful about, is to say, can we kind of step up a bit? Can we vamp it up a bit instead of just doing that kind of incremental change that's going to happen anyway? That makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know if there's much I could possibly add to that, because it's such a good recitation. I think Audrey's right. The strategic advantage of Scotland is always going to be, compared to some other systems, there's a scale. So if leaders can be brought together, and that's obviously part of what my organisation helps to do, because it's a networked organisation, leaders can be drawn together in rooms, in virtual rooms of reasonable size, and can quite quickly get behind things. So we're not unused. You know, there's a terror about a plan that says we've got to do something that is absolute by 2030. Of course there is, but also we're not unused in the Scottish system sometimes to reforms that require in less than 10 years quite significant changes. Mm. And a good example of that at the moment would be, you know, Scotland's colleges work towards net zero, where really in a bit less than a decade, some quite significant and impactful changes have been made in that sector. So there is that. The other reason why I think the college sector is going to be quite important in this is, for colleagues that perhaps are outside the Scottish system might not know, the Scottish primary and secondary school system has made some really big fundamental reforms over the last generation about how it's designed and how learning is kind of thought through and organised. And one of the things that's now quite significant, particularly in primary education, is global citizenship education. And when that's been measured most recently by the OECD, Scotland is doing very well in terms of student competence. When kids are in kind of middle secondary, their awareness of global questions, of citizenship, of equity, of you know, the rights of peoples around the world. So awareness there is really good. That's great. Then what do you do with that? And so how do you actually make that impactful when people enter the labour market, when they become citizens, voters, adults, workers? And that's kind of, I think, where colleges come in. So I think there is a step here where we connect the competencies and experiences of our younger people when they're learners in the school system with then what the education they receive when they're thinking about work and moving on into tertiary education. And that's where we come in. And I think that is quite a big role for you know, Robin, I hope you don't mind saying this, but, you know, cynically generating economic impact. Yes. Through our work on anti-racism. Yeah. That should be an important part of how we think about it. So there's nothing wrong with that. So I think the colleges are going to be pretty critical to that. And hopefully this small room that Audrey and I and others can get people into can drive some speedy change.
Yeah, thank you. That's really, really interesting. And particularly that you're highlighting there around small room, you know, to highlight there's 26 colleges in Scotland. So maybe there's power in being able to bring all those people together in one place to be able to make fundamental change. Maybe that's something that everyone needs to be thinking of about how do we do small group activity to be able to make this sort of move forward in collaboration. I just think that's quite interesting. I've got a whole stack of questions. Robin, is there anything else you wanted to add on top of that around sort of like the government sort of perspective? I know there's also some move around government around actively looking to bring people into Scotland as well to be able to have more diversity as well. I don't know if there's anything you want to unpack on that at all. Or
I think Jim's touched on that already. I mean, it's quite clear that there should be no difference between the moral case for anti-racism and the business case.
And
in the instance of Scotland, the government has recognised. That it needs external talent in order to make that progress economically. So I think we've covered that enough for me.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So, Jim, I know you've been putting together a bunch of different resources and works in collaboration with lots of different people. I didn't know if you could sort of unpack that a little bit around some of the things that you've done around sort of particularly in campus, also with leaders around some of the things that you shared and delivered with different colleges across the region.
Well, yes, of course. We're kind of at the start of some of this work, so I wouldn't want to overstate how much work has gone on here. So we need to be honest about that. What there has been, Nigget was talking about a bit about this in the video earlier on, there's been some college and university collaborative work on tackling racial violence, gender-based violence, violence against students on campuses. And that has largely focused on resources that have been more campus orientated, where there's obviously residential students and more of a university focus. But there has been some work done in the college sector too about awareness around that. I think the next bit that we haven't quite addressed yet, we need to talk about, and that's why we're excited too to be part of the leadership group, is around strategy that affects workforce as well. So what we haven't done much on yet, and we have the groups here. So we have, as I said, go back to our groups and gangs we can get together. We have networks in the Scottish education system for everything, more or less anything you can think of. We've got a network for it. We've got networks for HR professionals, for safeguarding professionals, for student services professionals that would work with student communities. And they're all ready starting to talk now at the moment about anti-racism strategy. So there's just a pivot point coming now, which is why this discussion is really useful. We've done some work which was much more applied and around violence prevention. And that's kind of some of the work that was led by Niget and Advance HE over the last couple of years in our system. But the next step is around cross-campus strategies around anti-racism, which are a bit more applied. And that's what we're really delighted to have this conversation, but also to be joining the group to drive that forward a little bit. So all of the networks are there and ready to go engage, but they haven't got plans yet embedded that are going to deliver cross college change. That's what we want to do next.
Yeah, sounds cool. Audrey, can I ask you, you're leading the largest college in Scotland, and 10% of the college activity for Scotland. That's huge. Do you know what I mean? But you've got like this unique opportunity where you can create the right environment for positive change. You can sort of work with your different SLT teams. You can work with all of your educators, full stop. But also got influence over others. How do you create the right environment for change? Because what I didn't mention earlier, there's so many things I can say. You've doubled the amount of diversity that you've got in your staff team in the college. And how do you create that right environment? Just thinking for other leaders, really, just to sort of think how they can sort of move forward, really.
Actually, I suppose people often will say to me, what is your kind of role as a leader? And for me, it's not to dictate, it's not to tell people what to do or how to do things, but it's to try and create that environment where talent flourishes, but other people take forward those agendas that are very important to them. Now, of course, absolutely, as the principal of a college and the board of a college has a key role to play for me in terms of, I guess, setting the tone, actually, if that makes sense. So setting the tone of what is important and what should be important. But then it's about saying, okay, how can you then galvanise that energy and commitment and passion for a collective group of people, whether that's students or staff or both, actually, to really, really make a difference, make change and make impact. And I mean, a good example of that would be in the college, the staffs themselves set up an anti-racist unity group. And the purpose of this group was to, and they did it without asking. I mean, they just did it. Yeah. And I just found out by chance it existed. And but the reason for that, and it was great, because the reason for that was they wanted to start to at least have the conversation, which is about mindsets, which is about culture shift, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result of that group being established, that really is bottom up, that's ground up effort, which is wonderful, is that a couple of the members of that group attended the first conference. So the AOC and BFE conference, came back from that conference. Absolutely, you know, we have to do more. We have to really step up. And actually that was fantastic, because that was staff on the ground, ended up helping, shaping a conversation in my own college where our equalities plan, which is 21 to 25, now has a very explicit outcome out of 7 outcomes, which is focused on race and religion. And that's where that started. So I guess for me as a leader, that's a good sign that staff are prepared to take their own initiative and to drive something forward themselves. But then coming back to me as a leader, I then have a responsibility not just to let that kind of be an initiative siloed type thing that's happening, is to bring it up and take a much more kind of strategic approach. And for me, that's where this, my hopes for this affiliation, no pressure, folks, but my hopes for this affiliation is that this creates that, I call it the scaffolding, around us in the college that we can then use to build and really build on a, you know, what is a solid foundation, but a small foundation, and take this forward.
Just
Sorry, Karen.
It was just to add to that, just, I mean, in case people are thinking that's just Edinburgh and that's just Audrey, of course a lot of that is, but just two other points. One of them is, there's a group, because I've been involved in the discussion, there's a group of our HR leads across the Scottish colleges that are often driving equality strategy, that are engaged in Audrey and Edinburgh's affiliation and are looking at it and thinking about it. So I just want that to be clear. There's a group of people who may well be about to follow. So this is not a unipolar discussion. The other thing is that one of the challenges can be thinking about Scotland as a metropolitan and then a rural Scotland, and that the two things are somehow divided. And whilst that may well be, you know, parochial examples of that being true, I've been involved in a discussion with one of my most rural colleges in the last couple of weeks, who have quite a profound equality strategy, which is built on the college we will be rather than the college that we are. So the BFELG helping us to understand the population and the community that we're going to be in 20 and 30 years is a really important part of unlocking college strategies today, because it'd be very easy to look at parts of rural Scotland and say, well, where do we start? What's the problem here? Well, you know, we haven't got a black community that we can that's in college and that is present and that we can work with, and that's not the right way to approach the discussion. And there are people already having that quite profound discussion, and it involves effort and it requires a lot of forethought, but that forward look is going to be a really important part that hopefully the group can help us with in the sector.
I'll just come in there, Gavin. That's an interesting point, because at the conference last week, at the IOC conference, I met somebody I've known for 20 odd years from the long distant past. And she had traveled down to the conference from Dumfries. And she said that she'd made a decision to move for quality of life reasons, and she'd loved it. Could I just ask both of you, if on the theme of importing talent or attracting talent, what would you say to black staff in the UK in general, but England in particular, about why they should consider Scotland as a destination?
Oh, that is a big question, actually. I mean, I'm completely biased, of course. Is that
obviously yes?
Scotland is wonderful, but I mean, there is. I mean, even within Scotland, though, and I think Jim would probably agree with this, there is a diversity within the sector itself, and that is really, really important. So whilst in so many ways it should be and is straightforward to take that sector collective approach to something, is that there is still a huge amount of diversity within our sector. So I come at things from, you know, large-scale college, city, and have quite a different experience to colleagues who are in the University of the Highlands and Islands, which, you know, small rural islands-based colleges. And I think part of the challenge in Scotland is that there is a population shift currently going on from west to east, actually, as well as a kind of central belt kind of focus. And it's interesting that the COVID experience and remote working and remote learning and teaching has actually kind of changed the conversation around place because suddenly your talent pool and competition for talent, both in both respects, has become much more kind of visible, actually, and much more important. So,
Robin, I'm not going to be foolish enough to say anything glib like there's no such thing as racism in Scotland, so everyone should come here, because that will sound absurd. So I'm not going to do that. But what I would say is I'm an immigrant to Scotland. I've been here, you know, I raised a family here, but I obviously don't come from Scotland originally. I live in Glasgow, and I come from the second greatest city in the UK, Nottingham, and I live in the greatest one now. But But you know, from my perspective, I would say it is a significantly welcoming community, and one where people can feel comfortable from a variety of backgrounds. So I would definitely make, and obviously it's beautiful, and obviously the quality of life is higher, and so many other things that we could talk about. So I would do all that, but I would also say, from a more of an economic standpoint, one of the sadnesses is that the post-industrial experience has given people the impression that Scottish migration is outward, because obviously there's been this process over the 20th century of a lot of Scottish people moving southwards to find work. And I know quite a lot about that, because I'm a migration historian by background. But actually, that's a false picture, that migration in the UK, let's just start with the UK, is a circular pattern, and it's all over the place, and people zipping upwards and sideways and downwards. So, you know, I've got a big picture on the wall of an article from the Glasgow Herald from the 1860s about Cornish miners who came up to sink mines in the west of Scotland. And they couldn't understand the word they were saying up here, but they interviewed them and found them really interesting, and they really liked them. And there's a cricket club in the Lothians near where Audrey's College is that was built by Yorkshire miners in the 1870s, and is still there today, and is still playing cricket in the middle of this, you know, this traditional working class Scottish community. But there's this little cluster of Yorkshire miners. It's a very unusual pattern of migration around the UK. It isn't unipolar, and so Scotland has been built by there's an Italian Scotland, you know, there is a Yorkshire Scotland, there is very definitely a Black and Asian Scotland as well. Over various periods of time has come in and out of our system, and I think more people will be attracted in the future to a more diverse Scotland. That's both strategy but also just history, and that's where we will go. The weather is the only barrier, and there's not a lot we can do about that, but that aside, the other attractions are evident.
Can I, Jim, you said something really, really interesting. We're nearly coming out of time. It's going to go in a blink of an eye again, this next bit, is aiming to be the college that you want to be, looking to the future. And what I'd like to ask everyone, actually, is if you could dream big, what would you want to be that college that you really desire, really want to be? Audrey, what would you want to say?
That's like a blinking exam question, isn't it? Actually, do you know something? So if you think about how we have responded to the challenge of a global pandemic, and that collective will and power, and, you know, just, we, you know, we're going to do our bit as individuals, but also collectively to make this okay. And actually, if we can't change things and transform things in this kind of context, then when can we? So there is a real opportunity. And actually, I also think a real lesson that when we really, really have to, we can absolutely do things very differently if we really, really have to, if there's enough of a driver. And I'm not sure if we could somehow package that will that we've had through the dealing with the global pandemic and apply that within the context of, for example, poverty or in terms of race inequality, or, you know, if you could somehow do that, that would be that would just be wonderful.
Yeah, that's cool. Jim, how about yourself?
I can't do as well as that. And also, I'm not in a college, so I'm an agency that supports a number of colleges. I think what I would say is I'm reflecting slightly about the events of the last couple of weeks with racism in sport. So I would say I would be happy if over the next couple of years we work together to move the discussion away from we are not racist in our approach to education in the Scottish college system, to we have done something positive and proactive to make Black and minority ethnic students feel and staff feel more empowered. So we do something proactive and positive. And at the moment, I think we're a little intangible in some of our approaches. Not Audrey's strategy in her college, but across our system, we feel like we're on the right side, but I'm not sure we're doing enough tangibly. So I would feel better if in 2 years from now we had this conversation again, and I felt Scotland had a coherent national actual strategy of doing something practical that was making an impact rather than just being generally on the right side.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a complicated term for that, but you know what I mean. You know?
Well, I'm going to lead to my next one. It's a really quick sort of bullet point, really. So it's action. You know, it's this series all titled around anti-racism and action. We've asked everyone, actually, what would be your action point? So, Audrey, if you could have one, what would you want it to be? It doesn't have to be immediate. It could be a long-term one. What would you think would be a good one to sort of do? And this is to inspire other people. It isn't to try to put you on the spot. This is just purely you're doing action points already. So it's just, what would you want it to be to inspire other people for an action point going forward?
Actually, I think Jim and I could do more of a double act on this, actually, in that I think there is a conversation to be had, which Jim and I could, you know, together as a double act, actually have a conversation with the other colleges, because as I said, we've got well established mechanisms to do that, and it's easy to do. So I really liked what Jim just said there, actually, is that how can we do that across the whole sector, actually, and build on that, those kind of glimpses of really, really good things happening already.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Robin, what would you want to see as an action point, being inspired by what we've heard today around our colleagues in Scotland?
Well, inspired is the right word, because, you know, I'm inspired by the Scottish government's ambition on this agenda. You know, they've not pulled any punches about what the recent history has been, and they've set out a really demanding ambition, achieving a non-racist Scotland within a decade. So I'm excited and inspired by it, and I'm also excited to be working with colleagues like Jim and Audrey, because this is about culture change, isn't it? This is the whole thing. Will it be only achievable if there is a culture shift and people stop being ambivalent about racism? Somebody said at a conference, one of the recruitment companies that we're working with in England said, it's not enough to be non-racist. You have to be anti-racist. And for the BFELG, anti-racism is a verb. You know? So that's why I'm excited.
Yeah, that's cool. Stella will have a fit if I don't answer this one as well. So for me, what I've been inspired about is small group, actually. I think it's a really, 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 really strong point around us all working. Audrey, 100% agree. It's got to be collective. Collective, collective is the only way we can sort of drive this forward. But why can't we, across the UK, have more small groups? Why can't it be across border as well? So why can't it be, you know, people in Wales dealing with people in Scotland? Why can't it be people in England dealing with Wales or Scotland or wherever? Why can't we do this? And I think that's probably the power in moving this forward, is collective and sharing different ideas and strategies on the way forward. I've been really inspired by today, and I just want to say thank you so much, Audrey and Jim, for joining us. Really, really stirred a load of really cool stuff there. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
this is a total co-produced live stream. Stada, he's worked really, really hard to bring this all together. So Stada, thank you so much. Robin, been a brilliant co-host as always. Thank you so much. Team FE News, Leah, thank you for making all the magic happen in the background. Kelly and Finley, thank you. And we'll see you next week for the grand finale, episode 9 of Anti-Racism in Action with the Black FE Leadership Group. It's going to be 9:30, 29th of November. See you really, really soon. See you next week.
Bye, folks.